Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, everyone's a superhero, everyone's a Captain Kirk. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jonathan.
So, you know what my favorite science fiction franchise with an overall optimistic perspective on what the future is going to be happens to really be?
Stargate SG-1.
You know, you're right. But my second favorite is Star Trek.
The Trek. The one and only.
Wait, hold on.
You got to say on the air, and people want to know.
Okay.
Original series, Next Generation, Voyager, where are you?
When it comes down to the actual episodes, I'm a Next Generation guy. When it comes to the films, I'm an original series guy.
Hmm.
I never really got into Voyager that much, although I understand that if I had stuck with it, I probably would have enjoyed it. I actually really like Deep Space Nine.
I did too.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that the political elements of Deep Space Nine
were
really
interesting.
Yeah.
So we've talked about Star Trek tech on this show before.
Uh-huh. Yes, we have.
And there's got to be a reason we're bringing up Star Trek again. Might it be there's a specific piece of technology on the Enterprise that we want to delve into?
Yes. Those elevators, those lifts are amazing.
They are. They're kind of like Wonkavators.
Yeah, they can go sideways or diagonal ways. Okay, we want to talk about tricorders.
Yes.
Tricorders.
Yeah. As it turns out, the tricorder has been getting a lot of attention recently, mainly because of the announcement of specific teams that are competing to make a real one.
Wait.
Yeah.
Make a real one?
Well, I mean, it helps first to explain what a tricorder is, right? To understand why making a real one is kind of a big thing in the first place.
Yeah, okay. So a tricorder is a medical device.
Mainly. Right? Although it can also be just an environmental sensor.
Yeah, it's a scientific device in general, but frequently used in medicine.
Yeah. Mr. Spock often carried a tricorder on away missions. They would beam down to a planet. Mr. Spock would look at the tricorder and say, "Captain, it appears we can breathe." Which is very useful information. But seriously, though, it had environmental sensors. Really, it was like a magic sensor that could detect anything.
It was a little bit of a sonic screwdriver.
It really was. It was very much like the Doctor Who sonic screwdriver in that it was capable of doing whatever the plot needed it to. But within the context of the shows, it either would give you information about your environment, whether something might be toxic or there might be contaminants in the environment. You might be able to tell if someone else had visited that same place that you visited. Let's say that it's a planet where it's pre-warp technology planet, so the Prime Directive is in full effect, and you detect there's a signature here that states that we're not the first people to visit. That would be kind of a typical Star Trek plot. But like you said, Lauren, more frequently than not, you also saw the tricorder being used in a medical capacity when Dr. Bones McCoy would be using it to determine what sort of terrible ailment had befallen a crew member before irascibly saying that he needed to treat it in some medieval terrible way. So the example I have here is, according to this, Ensign Smith, you have been stabbed by a Klingon. That would be a diagnosis. He would use after using the probe on a tricorder.
Right, which would be able to tell, I don't know, things about their vital signs or what's going on with their internal organs.
Yeah, and detect anything like a pathogen, any sort of thing that would affect their health in either a negative or a positive way.
Mm-hmm. So wait a minute. No, I'm trying to remember. To get a reading on someone, did he have to insert it directly into their torso?
He did not. There was a non-invasive tool. There were versions that had a separate little probe, but it wasn't a probe that would actually be invasive. You would hold it closer to the person.
Yeah. You would hover it near a person. It would make a little kind of noise.
Yeah. And you were required to move your hand while doing it, right? It wasn't like you just held it out to someone And this kind of ties into our discussions about in science fiction, you often have to have the actors do things so they don't feel like total idiots just standing there.
What type of scanning device works better when you jiggle it around?
Apparently a tricorder does. In the Star Trek universe, and these things look like giant cassette players. Do you guys remember cassette players?
Yeah, yes,
yeah, the kind where you had to actually hit the stop eject.
We're, hey, we're, We're from the 80s, not...
Look, I'm just saying...
I'm 14, so...
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, by the time you guys were around, there were more advanced versions of the basic tape player available. When I'm thinking about the old gray and silver ones that had the big window that you hit and it would pop the cassette out. That's kind of what these... early tricorders look like.
Sure. Later in Next Generation, it was more cell phone size.
Yeah.
Okay, but surely there's nothing like that in real life. Is there, like, just this wonderful all-purpose environmental medical sensor device?
Well, there are certainly people working on making it a real thing. We're not quite at the point where someone has a device that has all the capability of the tricorder. We certainly don't have one that is able to do everything from diagnose a patient to tell you whether or not there are toxins in the environment to telling you if someone had been there recently. We don't have anything like that, but we do have lots of advanced sensors. I mean, medical technology in general, at least the basic components, have all evolved quite a bit over the last couple of decades, although you may not see that reflected in any individual hospital's technology. Some hospitals are relying on technology that's, several years old.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, but, you know, the need for or the desire for having non-invasive technology, and especially non-invasive technology that patients themselves could use at home, is tremendous. And that is where the XPRIZE comes in.
Absolutely. So, you guys, before we even talk about the XPRIZE, I mean, we've talked about wearables on this show before, right? We've talked about wearables that can monitor things like your heart rate, that sort of stuff. Very common, and it shows that people are really interested in getting data about themselves. So the XPRIZE is taking it to that next step, the idea of not just, you know, what your heart rate is, but things like your respiration rate, how much oxygen's actually in your blood. Really interesting vitals that go beyond this sort of simplified approach that we see in things like fitness trackers. But the fact that fitness trackers are so popular shows that people are really interested in this and that it could, in fact, be a huge benefit if used responsibly. That's something that I'm sure I'm going to mention a couple of times in this episode, because one of the things I like to caution people about is don't ever assume that technology is going to completely replace the experienced and informed opinion of a medical professional.
Oh, certainly not. And that's not what they're going for here.
Right. Yeah. It's just that's the way a lot of people tend to interpret it. Mm-hmm. It's not the fault of the organization. It's not the fault of the different teams that are competing in this process. But often we think, oh, I have this gadget and now I don't ever have to worry about going to a doctor unless something goes horribly wrong. We have this kind of reactionary approach to medicine here in the United States, and that's just something I don't want to advocate for.
I would frame it more in these terms. It's not so much that you have a gadget that replaces a doctor, but you have a gadget that replaces Google and hypochondria.
And it also can augment what a doctor is able to do. If you are able to like if you start to see something that worries you, you can go to a doctor and say, I don't know what this means, but these are the readings I'm getting.
Vitals, yeah.
So does this mean that there's something I should worry about? And from that point forward, the doctor can handle things and make sure that you're getting the treatment you need. If you need it, you may not. And that's the important thing to remember. Now, the really cool thing is that you have this XPRIZE in the first place. And anyone who's been following technology and science has probably heard of the XPRIZE. It really started back in the 1990s. And the original focus of it was to kind of kickstart private space exploration projects, right? It was that whole prize of we'll give a certain amount of money to whichever team can have a spacecraft that can visit space within the span of 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. This was before SpaceX and et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the sort of thing that was supposed to fuel that kind of innovation, and it worked. We now have private companies that are working on developing stuff that goes out into space, some of which, like SpaceX, has already done it successfully a couple of times. So then you had XPRIZEs come up for other types of uses of technology, other innovation, not just space exploration. And one of those was the Tricorder Challenge, which is sponsored by Qualcomm. It has a $10 million prize for whichever team can create a tricorder that performs according to the contest criteria. And they set out exactly what this device is supposed to be able to do. And they leave a lot of the implementation up to the actual teams. So no one is forced into a specific form factor apart from some weight requirements, right?
Right.
So first you have to be able to diagnose 12 required core health conditions. Now, I'm just going to list some of these. These are not all of them, but it includes anemia, diabetes, hepatitis A, pneumonia, sleep apnea, tuberculosis. It has to be able to detect all of those. So there are 12 in total, and that's not an option. You have to figure out how your device can detect such a thing present in a patient that's using it.
Sure, and it also has to be able to detect the absence of anything wrong.
Right, it has to be able to tell you that if the person uses it and they don't have any of these conditions, that everything is
fine.
That
you are relatively normal and healthy,
yeah,
probably.
At least physically. Mentally, it's still just a roll of the dice, folks. Now, on top of the 12 required ones, you have to pick 3 elective conditions. So this is like an elective in a college course where you think, all right, you these are the course requirements. These are the courses you have to take in order to graduate. And then here are the ones you can choose from as your electives. Same sort of thing. So they have to pick 3 of one of the following, and this is just a selection of them. Allergens, cholesterol screening, foodborne illnesses, HIV screening, hypertension, melanoma, osteoporosis, pertussis, shingles, or strep throat, and more. So you have to pick 3 of those. There are a couple other choices that are also on the list. And then beyond that, the device must also be able to get accurate readings on 5 vital signs, which those are blood pressure, heart rate, oxygen saturation, respiratory rate, and your body temperature. The prototype device cannot weigh more than 5 pounds.
Oh, that seems like a big thing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it might be a lot easier to do this if you build this giant kind of...
Yeah, like a room that you walk into.
Right, right. Yeah. Or a bed. Like you just, or the patient lays in here and all the sensors are part of the bed, and then we lay this, you know, covering over that has even more sensors on it. Obviously that would not, win in this particular approach.
Can the device be a toilet?
A toilet that weighs less than 5 pounds?
Yes.
They actually do say that the method of getting this information is up to the individual company, but here's the kicker. Consumer use experience is also a factor when it comes to judging the success or failure of the tricorder. So it's not
prioritize things that are less unpleasant.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So would a consumer want to use this device? So if it's a device that's going to require something like a blood sample, that's going to be a bigger challenge than something that is totally non-invasive. Mm-hmm. This means that the different teams have to take that into consideration when they're making their designs. So it may be that you're able to get much more accurate information with something that's invasive, but on the flip side, maybe people wouldn't want to use it because it would mean having to, you know, prick a finger or otherwise get
take
a blood
a urine
sample.
Test or yeah. Example. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe like there's a disposable liquid container that's meant for urine samples. In fact, I've heard of some that do that. Mm-hmm. So that would be one of those cases where you measure the benefit of the metric you're looking for and the method you're using to look for it versus are consumers actually going to do this or will they be turned off by the idea? So you have to judge that as well. And then eventually they're going to have tests for these things. That's actually coming up in 2015. We're recording this in early September 2014. So next year, as of the recording of this podcast, they'll be putting these to tests and there'll be diagnostic tests to make sure the device does what it's supposed to do, as well as consumer tests to make sure that people would want to use it. And if it does well in those tests, then that's what sets it above the other competitors. Eventually the judges will make their decisions, they'll deliberate, and then sometime in 2016, there will be a complete awards ceremony where they will announce which team came up with the winning tricorder design. As a part of this, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration in the United States, is also involved in this competition and is discussing what sort of regulatory requirements would be in place for them to get the device cleared by the FDA so it could be used medically. And that means that you have essentially the FDA working as a consultant in your design process, which saves so much time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much a you don't have to worry as much about the submission process, the testing, and then they get back to you and tell you what you have to address in order to get FDA approval. I mean, that'll still be part of it, but this helps smooth out some of the potential roadblocks along the way, which I think is pretty cool.
Okay, well, so do we have any idea yet who's actually in the running and what they're working on?
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny because when I recorded the video that goes along with this audio podcast, I didn't realize it at the time, but the 10 finalist teams had just been announced. And
yeah,
I mean,
like possibly that day, I think.
Yeah. And it just so happened that I was researching it the day the information came out. I didn't know it was brand new information. I thought, oh, well, I guess these teams have been announced for a while, because this competition has been announced for a couple of years, right? It's not like this is brand new.
Yeah. Yeah. 2012, I think, was when it was announced.
Yeah.
And at the time, there were 255 teams in competition. Later, that was narrowed to 34.
Yeah. And it's now been whittled down to 10 teams. So 10 teams are still competing. These teams had to make a real commitment to be part of this competition. It's not something that you can just enter for free. You actually have to pay an entrance fee. And the way the entrance fee worked was that the earlier you registered, the less expensive the fee was. It began at $5,000. So when I say less expensive, I'm still talking about a healthy chunk of change, right? Some of these teams are little divisions of various companies. Some of them are partnerships between companies. But if you waited, if you dragged your feet and you waited to register at the end of the period, you were paying around $25,000 for your team to be part of this competition. So pretty impressive.
Call now and save.
Now, granted, keep in mind, if you are the team that develops the right piece of technology, it's a $10 million prize. And here's the other interesting thing I think about the XPRIZE is a lot of times the XPRIZE award is less money than what it would have cost in research and development to develop the actual technology.
Mm-hmm. Well, but hopefully you're creating a piece of technology that is a real investment.
Yeah, you know? It turns out that I think a lot of teams compete not thinking, oh, we're going to make this huge amount of money at the end of it, but rather they're competing because, one, they really believe in the competition. They believe in the goal, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And two, they realize that if they win, it's not so much the money that's the big draw. It's the fact that you are the XPRIZE winner.
Yeah, that publicity is priceless.
Exactly.
Well, even just being a finalist, you might get some publicity like we're about to give right now. Who are some of these finalists?
All right. So from the United States, this is a global challenge. So we've got countries all over the world that have teams participating. And the U.S. has the most teams that made it in the final 10, to the tune of 4 teams. Azon, DMI, the Final Frontier Medical Devices.
I get that
Star
one.
Star Trek. And Scanadu, which starred Olivia Newton-John and was amazing.
One of the first blog posts we ever wrote for our website was about the Scanadu Scout, wasn't it? Did you write that?
Yeah, I wrote that one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll actually have some extensive quotes from Lauren's blog post, which is, by the way, a fantastic read. So it was written all the way back in 2013, but is still absolutely relevant. So you should definitely, if you haven't followed the Forward Thinking blogs, go check it out. There's some great stuff on there. Some of it even I wrote. So the United Kingdom has 2 teams, Scan Nurse and Zensor are both from the UK. Then you have Canada's Cloud DX, and you have Slovenia's Mezi Simplifying Diagnostics. From Taiwan is Dynamical Biomarkers Group, and from India is Devantri. So these are the teams that are left. These are the final 10. And they're all working on different implementations of this. Some of them, like I said, require like a blood sample.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to make it a more challenging approach when it comes to that consumer use.
Which are the ones that require tears?
You just want someone to be weeping into a device and that tells you whether or not you're well.
I'd probably rather weep into a device than bleed into it.
I can understand that, but I think what would be terrible is that if I were making such a device and you wept into it, the only result you would ever get is, it seems you are sad. And that would be, well, that's not helpful at all.
The future is in your tears.
Yeah. Well, the interesting one to look at right now, I think, I mean, all of these are interesting. But like you said, Joe, we've actually have someone here who's looked into the Scanadu one specifically.
Yeah, and they held an Indiegogo campaign back in 2013 for a product called the Scanadu Scout, which is not going to be the final product for competition in the Tricorder X Prize.
Right.
However, it's related, certainly.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting funding project for the whole thing. The original goal for the campaign was $100,000.
Did they make it?
They raised $1.6 million.
What? Hi-ya, whoa.
Yeah, so it was doing okay for itself. And they also raised another $10.5 million in private financing by the end of 2013.
So that $10 million XPRIZE is looking pretty good.
So this Scout is not really intended to be a diagnostic tool,
right,
as much as a monitoring instrument.
Right. This isn't – like you said, this isn't their Tricorder. This was something that's sort of a first step, like a good foundation to work toward a Tricorder. But it was really more about vital signs as opposed to all this diagnostic stuff, right?
Right, with an emphasis on that non-invasive kind of thing. You know, it's this little gadget, like the size of a makeup compact or a hockey puck or something like that. And you hold it between two fingers, two specific fingers, and hold it up to your forehead, and it can give you all of this vital sign stuff. And it will connect automatically to an app that will record the data, can record it over time for you, can analyze it a little bit, and can let you upload it to your doctor eventually if you need to. The app is still in development, so this is all kind of hypothetical.
Right. Well, that's really cool stuff. I mean, the idea that you yourself are completing a circuit, and that's what allows this device to actually take those readings.
Right. This is where that specific part comes in, because it's the thumb and forefinger of your left hand. And so you're completing this biocircuit, right? Electrodes touching the head and one finger function as an electrocardiogram, or ECG, that measures your heart rate and rhythm. Against the other finger, there's a photoplethysmograph, or PPG,
Is that a thing? Are you making this up?
I feel like I've talked about it on this very show.
You probably have.
Although it's just, over a year ago.
There's so many.
Plethysmograph is such a great
So many syllables. All right. So what does that do?
It reads your blood flow through your skin, usually using lasers.
Oh, cool.
Or some other kind of light-based thing, and will measure your blood's oxygen saturation. There's also an infrared thermometer touching your head that will take your temperature. So it can analyze all this data within like 10 seconds, hypothetically, and send it via Bluetooth to your smartphone, and connect with that app. Hypothetically, they'll also include like a little gadget to connect to your map function in your phone so that if you do need medical attention, it can direct you to your local doctor or hospital.
Oh, yeah. So like you could say like, I'm feeling a little weird, and you hold it up and then it takes your readings and then it says, okay, well, if you need to go to the urgent care center, it might be, you know, take this route. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. Although really, you know, like we've been saying, the real idea behind the Scout specifically in the XPRIZE in general is to not, you know, direct you to a doctor, but to kind of put this capacity within the hands of consumers.
Right.
Certainly for diagnostics.
Yeah. They said in the XPRIZE itself, it says that these devices are not necessarily meant to get to a point where you could get a prescription based off the reading of the device, but they said that in the future, we may even have gadgets that are able to do that, although you would more likely see that under the umbrella of an official medical facility.
Right. But, you know, just saving time with, you know, not having you have to go to a doctor's office unnecessarily, save that doctor's time so that they can treat patients who really need help.
So do you know if the name Scanadu is supposed to be a mashup of the movie Scanners and the movie Xanadu?
Gosh, I hope so.
I know it's a reference to Xanadu, not the movie necessarily.
No, I think it's probably the poem.
But yes.
I love the idea of going around on roller skates, seeing Olivia Newton-John, and then your head explodes.
That's what I was imagining when y'all were talking about this device.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty fantastic movie.
Okay, someone call Olivia Newton-John. We need this.
Yeah.
This is an important film.
Let's start a Kickstarter.
I legitimately love Olivia Newton-John, so I will brook no actual mocking of her.
No mocking. That sounds like a great movie.
Fantastic.
Okay,
then we're all on the same page.
Transition.
Yes.
As much as we all love Xanadu and Scanners.
All right, yes.
Okay, Jonathan, I heard you met some kind of medical device heroes at the con this weekend.
I did. I actually talked to some folks who were interested in this, some of whom have worked on projects like this. Whether or not they're actually part of the XPRIZE, I know one of them had been part of it. I don't know if he's part of the 10 teams that have made that final cut, because while I was at Dragon Con, that's when this announcement came out. So it's possible that he had been part of one of the 30 some odd teams before it got cut down to 10. But they were talking about their reasons for getting involved in it in the first place, which I think will stay true whether they're part of the XPRIZE or not, because I know that a lot of these organizations are looking at funding from various different groups, not just the XPRIZE. And he was specifically thinking about creating a tricorder-like device for medical professionals to make their jobs easier. So getting vitals would be a much more easy thing to do, and that you could continuously monitor those vitals. So this would be a device that presumably a patient would wear in some way, or would otherwise be close enough to the patient to have a continuous monitoring situation going on. Because he was saying there were a lot of issues with things like sepsis. You know, patients who go through surgery can suffer from sepsis, which is essentially blood poisoning. One of the most common causes of that is infection. Mm-hmm. If some sort of infection comes up, that's why you see doctors and nurses with face masks on. It's not so that they don't get sick. It's so that they don't share their germs with patients, right? So sepsis can be really, really a dangerous situation. If you're suffering from it, you may die. It can be deadly.
It's especially dangerous because it is difficult to diagnose until there's already a problem.
Absolutely, yes. It can reach
a serious problem.
Exactly. It can reach a critical level before you're even aware that there's something serious going on. And even if you are able to detect it, you know, late in the game and save the patient's life, there can be some life-altering issues that result from this, like organ dysfunction or even having to have a limb amputated due to this. So we're talking about a really serious issue. And the thought is that with a continuous monitoring system, it can look for tiny examples of things that might indicate that there are the conditions ripe for sepsis to happen, right? So that you can monitor it much more closely and intervene earlier before it becomes a serious issue. So if you pair this with a really particularly complex algorithm, something that is really good at detecting these minute changes and raising an alert before it becomes a serious concern, the hope is that you save patient lives and improve quality of life post-surgery. So that seems like a really awesome goal to me. I mean, the idea of let's cut this down and make sure that people are having as good an experience as they possibly can. I mean, surgery is already so traumatic for so many different reasons. You want to be able to minimize that trauma as much as you possibly can. And on that vein, there are other medical devices out there that have been proposed that aren't tricorders. They're not meant to monitor or diagnose patients, but are rather meant to help surgeons do their work by making fewer mistakes in the process. And there's one that's being developed out of the St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto that's dubbed the surgical black box.
Oh, as in like an airplane.
Like an airplane.
Yeah.
Box.
A recorder box.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the idea is that it's a series of cameras that would be set up in a surgical room, surgical theater, whatever. Microphones as well. And very complex computer algorithms that would study the movements a surgeon makes in real time for whatever surgical procedure it happens to be, and make sure that the surgeon is operating within the right parameters. And according to Dr. Teodor Grancharov, who works at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, he did a study where he looked at specific surgeries, and he looked very closely and saw that even experienced surgeons were making up to 20 mistakes in a single surgical procedure. Now, these mistakes might not be life-altering. They might not even be that dangerous. They might not have any kind of negative impact on the patient, but they were still a mistake. And you figure the more surgeries you have to perform within a given time frame, the more likely you are to make a mistake. Alert fatigue starts to set in. And the idea is that this device would, this system really, it's not even a device, this system would help surgeons by alerting them before they make a mistake. If they start to make a move that would result in a mistake, they could be alerted, they could refocus and continue and thus eliminate more mistakes through a process, which I think is pretty cool. It's also, I mean, just imagine how I don't know how to implement that in a way that wouldn't be incredibly distracting. If you're talking about 20 mistakes in a single procedure, then if it's going to alert you 20 times in a procedure, I mean, imagine driving a car and it's alerting you every time you do anything that is remotely outside the norm. So,
it'd be like playing Operation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be a little, that would be a frustrating experience.
Like
now, granted.
If it screamed at you every time you drive on the sidewalk.
Yeah. I'm thinking of,
every single time?
I actually know someone who had a car. I think it was a rental car. It wasn't like their own car. Mm-hmm. But they had a car that would chime at you if you got to, if you went above the speed limit for an area. Now, folks, we live in Atlanta. And if you are driving on one of the highways in Atlanta and you're driving the speed limit, you are going to cause an accident.
Yeah, that is way too slow for traffic most of the time.
I would be skeptical that the car accurately knows the speed limit
for
all
any
the
given
surface
space.
Streets at any given time.
Yeah, it may have even been that it just had a setting where it would chime if you went
like
above
the speed setting.
Yeah, like if you went above 55 miles per hour.
Yeah, the Keanu Reeves setting.
Right, and in which case you'd be, yeah, exactly. Like, well, now the bomb's activated, so you're just going to have to keep going like this forever. It was maddening to ride in that vehicle because now the person driving it seemed to be acclimated to it. But to anyone else, they would think like
its own problem.
Right. Exactly. Like if you're ignoring it, then clearly it's not working in the first place. But any other passenger in that vehicle couldn't have a conversation because you'd just go crazy. But anyway, I assume that maybe in the case of surgery, obviously you're talking about a very delicate line of work that has huge impact to alter the life of the person that you're working on. So maybe in that situation, it would be greeted more with, a welcoming kind of response, especially since if you even just want to get cynical and say, I'm just going to be totally just pragmatic, it cuts down on chances of things like malpractice. Mm-hmm. Because if you're alerted ahead of time before it happens, then you can
correct.
Yeah.
Right.
And then if there are any complications that happen afterward, you may say, well, there were complications, but we have this record here that shows that our surgeon did everything exactly right. So, sometimes complications happen even if everything went as planned.
As planned. Yeah. Also keep in mind that many surgeries occur over the course of hours and hours.
Absolutely.
And so 20 mistakes, it sounds like a lot, perhaps, if you're not thinking about the fact that I don't know how long these surgeries took. So
right.
It might have been an 8-hour period
right.
over and, which 20 mistakes were made.
And again, when we say mistake, it could be something really, really minor that ultimately didn't have an impact on
right.
the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still something that didn't happen as planned or it didn't happen the way that technically it should have happened. So that's really interesting to me, too. I'm really curious to follow this story further, find out who's going to be the winner. I hope that all the different teams are able to produce things that end up being really effective, whether it's in the original intended implementation or it evolves into something else. I think it's really exciting.
This is very interesting. I mean,
yeah.
I wonder how non-invasive it can get.
Yeah. Like, can it be something that is literally like the Scout where you hold it to your temple and it's able to get a reading, or are we going to have some sort of sampling of body fluid or something?
Right, right. The Scanadu company is also creating a urine test device.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything that can sample body fluids is obviously a different kind of category than something that you're just holding up to a person.
Or waving generally at them.
Yeah, I mean, so like the non-contact waving, do we think that's even realistic, even in the long term? I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical because I don't even know how that would work if you're not even, you know, touching somebody's skin.
I think that if the sensory technology, from what I know about stuff like the PPG, if laser censoring advanced to a point that you could really do that quick of a sweep, and it could accurately measure almost the way that like ultrasound works now, what's going on inside of you, then. Maybe, but that is such a science fiction-y concept, according to me right now. Based on my albeit limited knowledge, I can't see that happening for 20 to 40 years at least.
I think it requires a couple of things, and both of them are big. One of them is, like you were saying, Lauren, the maturation of censoring technology so that they're able to pick up on very, very subtle things very quickly and reliably. The other is identifying what those subtle things are for the case of every single possible disease or condition.
And taking into account the fact that many things have similar symptoms, and furthermore that there's also just a lot of noise going on.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's
exactly. There could be stuff that is outside the norm, but isn't particularly dangerous or relevant to whatever is really the cause.
I think at first it would probably be more like WebMD, where, you know, like you scan someone and it's just like, well, probably you have cancer.
Right. Or it'll say like, you either have a headache or leprosy. Toss a coin. So I'm with you, Lauren. I'm skeptical as well. Joe, what about you? What do you think?
I just said I was skeptical.
Oh, are you also skeptical?
Oh, maybe I didn't say. I thought I implied.
You probably did. And I just already forgot.
I don't know. What I'm saying is I'm skeptical about the no contact.
Right.
Tricorder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know how that would work. But I mean, I'm no expert. Obviously, I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
I would love it if we are amazed and find out that there is some sort of new way of doing that. That would be phenomenal. But even if that never comes to pass, the work that these teams are doing is really inspiring to me. So I wish them all the best. I cannot wait to see which one of them walks away with the prize. And I really am eager to find out what the other teams do as well. I mean, I really think that everyone working on this is doing so that we all stand to benefit in one way or another from the work. So it's really exciting. If you guys out there have any suggestions for future episodes of Forward Thinking, maybe there's some other X Prize you've always wanted to learn more about, or maybe there's some other type of technology or just an element of human existence, and you're thinking, what's that going to be like 50 years from now, 100 years from now? You should let us know. We'll take a look at it. We'll do a podcast about it. Maybe we'll do a video about it. Drop us a line on Twitter, on Facebook, or Google+. Our handle at all three is FW Thinking, and we'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.